Love Osho podcast brings you the real stories of the people whose lives have been inspired and transformed by Osho. We explore why thousands of people are falling in love with Osho and where to find them. Take a deep breath and enjoy the show.
Hello and welcome to the Love Osho podcast. My name is Swaram and I'm the host. Today our guest is Swami Anand Arjava. Arjava is an international best-selling author committed to sharing his research into Japanese Reiki history and practice. Arjava is vice representative of the Jikiden Reiki Institute Kyoto, and through his teachings he has brought back Reiki to the land of its origin. Arjava is also a family constellation facilitator and meditation teacher. Hello Arjava, welcome to the Love Osho podcast. How are you?
Oh, thank you. I'm very well. And thank you very much for inviting me. We're both in Greece. Yeah, it's fun to call from one island to another. And I'm really very much looking forward to talking to you.
Indeed, it's really fun. And we are at probably the two furthest away islands, Corfu and Lesbos. One is close to Italy and the other is close to Turkey.
Yes.
A long way, but still Greece. Okay, cool. So I'm really looking forward to chatting with you and discussing with you about your story with Osho, your journey as a sannyasi and as a spiritual seeker. And obviously, we talk about your passion and profession, which is Reiki. You have written 10 books already published and more to come. And you have been practicing for many, many years. So you have a wealth of experience on this topic. So, but let's start from the beginning of your journey. Tell us a little bit about how you came to know about Osho.
Okay, you know, basically I'm a storyteller. Everything in my life has a story to it, and I love just telling stories. Like in the old days, some guy sitting by the fire and telling stories. So I will go back a little bit. To me, my spiritual search didn't really start consciously when I was very small. Like I hear sometimes fellow sannyasins saying, oh, I always knew I was looking for truth and spiritual development. For me, it wasn't like that. My childhood was very protected, very simple. I was just perfectly happy for the first few years in my life. Then I entered school. Things became difficult at school because I have this inability to do things that I don't like to do. I still have that. So it became difficult. And as a teenager, I came across Zen Buddhism when I was like 15 or so. And I developed this passion for Japanese culture, which stayed with me until today and also led to all the Reiki work, obviously. So I had this idea that I would finish high school, and then go to Japan and enter a Zen monastery and disappear from the face of the earth. That was my secret plan, but of course things happened very differently. So instead of going to Japan, when I was 17 or so, we got a letter from my brother who wrote to us from India that he was at the Osho ashram, and at the time in Germany, the ashram in Osho got very, very bad reviews in the press. You saw horrendous film footage of people beating each other, screaming their hearts out, and we thought, oh my God, he has lost the plot. And we got to do something about that. And we waited for another couple of letters and we were worried. So my parents and I decided that it would be a good idea for one of us to go and take a look if he's okay. So it was decided that I would go. I had already 2 years of Raja Yoga experience with an Indian neighbor of ours, and I thought I was immune to being indoctrinated by the evil guru. Yeah? So I went to Pune, and I remember stepping into the ashram, trying to save my brother And I took one look around and I saw all these beautiful people and people who I realized were much ahead of me. And I thought, oh my, this is the place I want to be. There's no other place on earth I want to be. So instead of saving my brother, I got saved myself. That's how it started. Yeah? And instead of the Zen master that was going to destroy my ego in a Japanese Zen monastery, the job went to a string of Japanese women who were at the ashram who destroyed me piece by piece with pleasure. That's how it started.
Okay, it's really fun. So basically your parents lost two children at Wash on the in the commune.
Yes, they lost two kids, and we were three originally, but my sister died as a baby. She was the first child. So suddenly both of their boys were gone, and they thought, okay, if one of them goes, my elder brother anyway was a bit difficult, so maybe there's something wrong with him, but now the second one is also gone. There must be something in it. So they came. About a year later, they came and to check if we are okay and to check the place. And they loved it. They absolutely loved the atmosphere of the ashram. And the only thing that my mom didn't like about it, she said, was this place is not the real world. And of course, she was right. It wasn't the real world, but really deeply inside, it was. Yeah, the ashram was like a pressure cooker of the real world condensed times, I don't know, 100, 1,000, a million. Whatever was happening in you got reflected and it was straight in your face. It was an incredible experience. So my parents loved it. They stayed for a few weeks and it was really funny because they have obviously a Christian background and they're very much into their religion. So they would go to church in the morning and then after go to Osho's discourse every day. It was like a joke. Yeah? First the church, then Osho.
Yes. Well, that's beautiful to hear that your parents came and somehow understood what it was all about, and I guess that meant that you had a good relationship with them and they could understand your world and appreciate your choices and also gave you a very good advice, in fact, because yeah, it's true that the ashram was a reflection of the real world, but in another way it wasn't because the dynamics and the energy that it was, you know, the Buddha field created by all of you there, it's not what you normally experience outside in real life. So great. So you are very young. You are kind of 18, 19. So what happened? Did you leave school? Did you completely left? How long did you stay? And did you go back to the real world at some point?
Yeah, so what happened was this. I already mentioned that it's been difficult for me to do things that I don't like doing or that I don't see the point in doing. So my schooling came to a sudden stop when I was 17, and at some point the high school just kicked me out. So I'm kind of a born rebel. Yeah? I couldn't stand it. So they kicked me out, and both my parents were academics. They were both landscaping architects. And they, of course, were wishing for their sons to go and have an academic career, go to university. And they ended up suddenly with two of them not doing that at all, but going to Pune instead. So they were very tuned in and very clever and very open-hearted and warm. And they realized that, okay, instead of the university education, the boys will get their education from Osho. And they supported that, just like other parents support your university year. So after a while, they started sending us some money to to live at the ashram, and I stayed for a year, a little bit more than a year and a half with their help. Later on, went back to Germany and finished some things there, and then went to the ranch to be with Osho again. And at that time, my parents had sold a house that belonged to my grandparents, and they financed several years, almost 3 years of stay in Rajneeshpuram for me. It was so kind, so amazing. I still can't believe it. I have two kids, and I know what it's like, but I can't believe they did that. They did this totally against all their convictions, against their conditioning. Something bigger was working through them, and they just wanted us to be able to experience that time with Osho. Amazing.
It's extraordinary. And again, it's so beautiful that we captured this on record, because normally, again, the bad press, it's all about Osho destroying family, separating children from the parents, and all these horror stories that you hear. Whereas, you know, in your case, your parents were so open-minded, so intelligent, even though they had a completely different background and they were religious and Christians, but they could understand that that was good for you, and they supported you financially, economically, and knowing perfectly well that you were not getting the official academic qualifications that they desired. So it's really a beautiful story, amazing. So, wow. So you spent quite a lot of time as a young man in the presence of Osho. I'm wondering, have you had any personal one-to-one meeting with Osho, or asked him questions and got some personal guidance from Osho?
Yeah, when I came was in, I was 18. I came in March of 1979. And at the time, there weren't so many people there yet. It was just starting. People were just starting to pour in from all over the place. And when you took sannyas, you had a one-on-one meeting with him. He told me what the meaning of my name was, gave me a new name, and then you could ask him questions. I remember when I took sannyas, I was so overwhelmed. The way it went was like this. There was every day 4 or 5 people taking sannyas. Then Mukta, one of the sannyasins, who later on became my boss in the garden department when I was growing Osho's food, she would call the names, you would go forward, and then you would be really, I mean, half a meter away from him. He had the most incredible eyes. You would just completely drown in them. You would just see his eyes. The whole world would disappear. And he would say, okay, now you close your eyes and listen to the sounds. And all you heard, or all I heard, was my heart going thump, 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 thump. And then slowly, slowly, I became quiet. And as if he could look right through me, the moment I was quiet, he said, okay, now open your eyes and look at me. And there was only him and you. Everything else, the whole world disappeared, and you felt like you met your, I don't know how to say it, your best friend, yourself. You were looking at pure love, and you could tell him anything, and there was no division at all between you and him. So then he gave me a beautiful guidance as to my name. He kept my name, called me Swami Anand Frank, and he said Frank means freedom, Anand means bliss. And then he said that you can go on either two paths. Either you can go on the path of love, devotion, or the path of meditation, the path of a warrior. And it was quite amazing, because I did both, actually. For many years while living in Japan, it was all about meditation afterwards, about 10 years later, all about meditation, going in, developing awareness. And then later on, when I moved to Greece about 10 years ago, it changed and turned into the path of love. Yeah? So he gave me a map, a beautiful map, how I could lead a beautiful, loving, kind, meditative life. Huh? Incredible, quite incredible. So the first time I met him, he asked me, "Do you have anything to say to me?" And the only thing I could was shake my head. Huh? I couldn't. There was no incentive to say anything, to change anything, no wish to know something. There was no question. It was just blank, a completely empty moment. I just went, and that was it. And then before I left, I had what was called a leaving darshan for all the people who were going back to the West who could ask him something. And I knew that he was going to ask me beforehand. So you can imagine, you play this scenario in your head for a few days, what you're going to say to him, what he's going to say to you. And I thought, okay, the only thing I really want to know is which of the meditation techniques I should do while I was away in Germany. And he, of course, this is how it went. He said, okay, how long have you been here? What did you do? What groups did you do? So I told him I did a group called Intensive Enlightenment or Enlightenment Intensive. And I did one called Centering and something else. And he said, good. And do you have anything to say to me? I said, yeah, which meditation should I do when I'm in Germany? And I thought he was going to look at me and tell me, oh, you do this one. This is good for you. Instead, he said, which one did you like the most? And this was the most obvious thing to say, but I didn't expect that. I didn't expect that he would come back to me and say, hey, you know, what is it that really touched you? I was kind of still looking at him as a big daddy or God or something at the time. So I was totally surprised at his question. And because I had the Raja Yoga experience, I really liked one that's called Gauri Shankar, where you look into a strobe that has a special frequency, a blue light, to work on the third eye. And I'm thinking, I will say, I like Gauri Shankar. And I said, I like Nada Brahma. And I'm sitting there thinking, why did I say that? What am I saying? It's not true. I don't like them. I like the other. And he's sitting there smiling from one ear to the other and say, okay, this is what you will do. He tricked me. And then came the next question. He said, okay, when will you be back? So the first time I went, I was in Pune only for 3 weeks. And went back to Germany because I was in the middle of a farming apprenticeship, learning organic farming. And I calculated, okay, I have one more year of this. Then in Germany at the time, we had mandatory army service, which was a year and a half, or social work if you didn't go to the army, a year and a half. So 1 year, 2.5 years. And then I thought, okay, I need to make some money. So 6 months to make money. And all of this is happening in like a split second. Yeah? And I'm thinking, calculate one and 1.5 and 6 months is 3 years. I can't say that. As an 18-year-old boy, 3 years is eternity. Yeah? So I look at him, I say, oh, I don't know. And he looks at me, he smiles and he says, don't worry, you'll come back at the right time. And then I went back to Germany about 6 months later. I wake up in the middle of the night, laying on my back in bed. I never sleep on my back. I always sleep on the right side. And I feel this very intense presence in the room. I open my eyes. I look, and I had this old kind of antique leather chair in my room, and Osho is sitting in it, and he looks at me and he says, come back to Pune immediately. The next day, I canceled all my responsibilities, went to work for a few months at the local post office, and left. And I had to escape from the army.
So exactly. I was thinking about that. So what did you? How did you manage that part?
So I was supposed to let the army know that I'm going out of the country, but I thought maybe they don't know. So I just go, I just wing it. Yeah? So I went to Frankfurt to the airport. I remember shaking, thinking, oh, I hope they don't have me on the list. And I just left and I thought, I'll never come back. I'm going to Pune forever. That's it. Yeah? It was quite risky. Yeah.
Yes. A bit naive, as a young man. And don't think of too much of ahead of the time. You just think of now. But so did they come and pick you up from the ashram?
Exactly. So I had told my parents that if they write to you, you just tell them, you don't know where he is. Yeah? And then a few months later, I changed my strategy. I just recently reread some letters I had written to my parents, which they had kept, luckily. And I had said to them, okay, if they bother you too much, just tell them he entered a strange sect and he's writing weird letters from India. And then
I'm not sure it didn't work very well with the German military.
But what were they going to do? Yeah, they were not going to go to India to pick me up. Yeah? So they just left it. And when Osho left India to go to the US, this was about 1.5 years later, I suddenly found myself in India thinking, oh no. What am I going to do now? If I go back, I go to jail. There was a 5-year prison sentence for deserting the army. So instead of going to Germany, I went to Holland because the Dutch government had done some kind of amnesty for German army deserters. And I stayed there for a while and remembered that when I was in Pune, I lived with somebody who used to be the ex-speaker of the police of the city of Hamburg. And I asked him if he had some connections with the army. He did. And he organized for me to come back to Germany without going to jail. But then I had to do the social work for 1.5 years. And just when I finished that, I got a letter from Sheila inviting me to the ranch. Yeah? So it all worked out just as Osho said, you will come back at the right time, everything perfect. Yeah? And this way I was lucky to spend five and a half years in his presence.
Yeah? Wow, what amazing. A story. It's really amazing. Yeah. Really amazing. I love
if it. You know, if you ask people, and I'm sure you have done this many times by now, if you ask people how they came to Osho, it's just magic. I mean, you could do a book just about this. Pure magic. Incredible.
Absolutely. I'm collecting so many stories and I have so many ideas. One day I can write a book just on this, how people came across Osho and all these incredible things. I mean, your story is quite special, I have to say, but there are lots of incredible stories. Or you can just say the story of how was to meet Osho first time, you know, the experience of being in the presence of Osho. I mean, there are so many angles, you know, it's quite exciting and thrilling for me to collect all this testimony. I'm really enjoying it. I'm loving it. Okay.
Nice. So. Yeah. I'm glad you're doing it because, I was young. I'm 60 now. And most of the people who were there were maybe 10, maybe 15 years older than me. And slowly, this dinosaur is dying out. And it's good to record all of this to keep it for the future humanity. Yeah,
indeed.
So thank you. Thank you for doing that.
Oh, well, my pleasure. So let's talk about your profession and your passion. You're a Reiki practitioner. As we mentioned before, you wrote 10 books. There are many more to come. You have been working with this for many, many years. So how did you start with Reiki? And also then I want to know a little bit about Osho and Reiki, because I don't know much about that. In general, I don't know much about Reiki. Of course, I heard a lot, there are many people doing it, but I never went deep into the subject. So I'm really curious to know what is Reiki in general. I'm sure there are so many different approaches. It's like talking about yoga, and then you get into yoga and there are like thousands of different schools and sub-schools and approaches and etc. So let's start with you. How did you get involved into Reiki? A little bit about Reiki in general for people like me who don't have much understanding about it, and then see if there is any connection between Reiki and Osho.
Okay, so again, I get into my storytelling mode. As we already discussed, my parents were very open and into alternative things, even though they were traditional German people. Yeah? So we have in Germany, we have a long tradition of homeopathic medicine. Yeah, it kind of comes from there. Yeah? So I grew up going to the homeopathic doctor instead of to a Western medical practitioner. And I always liked these alternative healing methods because I grew up with them. And then one day in Pune, I had a terrible headache. And my girlfriend at the time had a friend who was practicing Reiki. So she said, hey, maybe she can help you with your headache. I will go and fetch her and then maybe she can give you a treatment. We did just that. The headache didn't go away. The treatment, I thought, was the most boring thing I'd ever experienced in my whole life. Afterwards, I went to the hospital across the street from the ashram, got some strong painkillers, and the headache was gone. But then the strange thing happened that I thought, okay, Reiki, boring, ticked off the list, don't need to be interested in that, it's boring, it doesn't work, no good. I started to look for a Reiki teacher. And I was wondering myself, why are you trying to learn something that you didn't enjoy and didn't do what you thought it might do for you? And I didn't realize that for many, many years what the actual issue was. So what happened is that in a Reiki treatment, the practitioner will touch your head, will touch other parts of your body. And when you get touched with cosmic energy like that, there is some remembrance that wakes up. Yeah, some remembrance that you and cosmos and universe are one, yeah? Some memory of oneness. And that pushed me, I know now, that pushed me to look for somebody to teach me. So in Pune, I couldn't find anybody. There were people teaching Osho Reiki in Pune, but somehow our schedules never met. Every time they did a group, I had something else to do, or the teacher got sick, or there weren't enough people. Somehow it didn't work. It was getting a little bit frustrating. I'm thinking, why is this not happening? But there was a good reason for that. In Pune at the time was the main human growth center in the world. It was incredible. You could do groups or have individual sessions with the most incredible therapists. It was just unbelievable for little money. Yeah? And Osho would allow people to do almost anything. If you wanted to do something, let's say you want to teach Reiki, you would have to tell him, okay, I want to do this, and it comes from Japan, and explain a little bit. And if he liked it, he would say, okay, you can do it. And then he would call it Osho Neo something, Neo Shiatsu, Neo Reiki, Neo house cleaning, anything. Yeah? So they taught Reiki at the ashram, but I somehow, I couldn't learn it there. It didn't happen for me. Yeah? So a few years later, I learned from my brother, the same brother who had saved me before. And I was already living in Japan at the time. I had a Japanese wife, also a sannyasin, and I went from Japan to Germany to learn a Japanese healing art in Germany to take it back to Japan. It was kind of a slapstick movie. Yeah? I found it so funny. And then I started teaching Japanese people Reiki in Japan. And that was very strange because originally Reiki comes from Japan, but nobody was doing it there. And this is one of the secrets of Japanese culture. They often don't really value their own cultural assets until it's exported successfully. Many people start doing it somewhere else, and then they re-import it, and then they start using it themselves. It's a very odd situation. Yeah? So I originally learned Reiki in Germany, then went back to Japan, started teaching it there, taught lots of people, a few thousand people, and in the process found a Reiki teacher who was teaching traditional Japanese Reiki, a grandma. Her name was Chiyoko Yamaguchi. She was 80 or 79 at the time when I met her, and then I re-studied with her and learned the totally traditional Japanese style Reiki, which is very different from what is being taught elsewhere. Yeah, it doesn't have any new age components, but it's strictly Japanese culture, Japanese spirituality. And the basic of it is this. Yeah? The Japanese people, not the Buddhists, but the Shinto people, the indigenous religion of Japan, they believe that every human being has a soul, and that soul is implanted in the center of the brain, in between your eyebrows, by the gods during the third or fourth month of the pregnancy when you're in your mother's womb. Yeah? And through that soul connection via an invisible pipe on the top of your head, a channel on the top of your head, you are connected to source, to a collective soul. Yeah, so this is the general idea. And by learning Reiki, you become aware again of that unity with cosmos. That's the whole idea. And the healing that happens in a Reiki treatment really is a side effect, a welcome side effect that happens when you are in harmony, when you are in tune with nature. Yeah? And that was right up my alley. I liked it from childhood already. So I started getting into it more and more. Then I started to write about it. And that's how it went.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much. You made it very simple and clear. I really like this easy to understand explanation. Okay, so you mentioned before that when you were in Pune, there was Osho Reiki. You described the fact that if people had some interest, they would go to Osho to ask if it was possible for them to introduce this new approach. Could be therapy, could be alternative medicine, could be, you know, Reiki, etc. But did Osho ever say anything about Reiki? Is there any reference of Osho or anything that you have found in your research?
Yeah, not that I know. I checked all the possible channels. He never talked about it. Yeah, he just endorsed it when one of our friends, Himani, a German sannyasin, she introduced Reiki. She must have written to him and explained to him what it is, where it comes from. Can I teach it here? And he just said, yes, this is beautiful. It fits with our work here. So she started teaching Reiki at the ashram. And of course, what she taught essentially is just the same that I do. Yeah, there are some changes they had made to suit somehow the Osho environment, but the basic thing is the same, and the energy that comes out of your hands when you do it is exactly the same. There's no difference. Huh? Little difference in approach, in techniques, in philosophy, yeah? Because I had this longing for Japan and I spent 14 years there, the traditional way, it suited me better.
So you practice the most original form of Reiki, if you like.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, so with no Western influences, I was my teacher's first non-Japanese student. And after she passed away, her youngest son took over the association. And then, I don't remember, 12, 14 years ago, he asked me to be the vice president of that. Yeah, so now I'm very involved in that. We have a big institute with about 35,000 students. It's going good.
Amazing. Oh, wow. I'm so happy to hear that. So what sorts of issues normally are best suited to be treated by Reiki?
Okay. We have to differentiate a little bit now. A lot of people who teach, let's say, the more Western approach to Reiki, they think it's some kind of wellness technique. But my teacher said, no, this is not about wellness. This is about treating people who are seriously ill. And the more seriously ill somebody is, the better it works. Okay, so I've been treating people, lots of people with cancer, lots of people with life-threatening illnesses. And maybe the difference between the Eastern approach and the Western approach is that my teacher taught me to treat people daily for a month, every day, and then you will see good results. And that's what I see.
So you're saying that you successfully treated people with serious health conditions like cancer through Reiki?
Yeah. But now comes the point. So when you think that a healer heals somebody, you're completely wrong. Yeah, no healer heals anybody. If anything at all, the body heals itself. The body is the healer. Yeah, the human body is the most incredible healer. So all you do in Reiki is you remove obstacles. That's it. You energize the body. The body then takes that energy and starts to heal itself if it still can. Yeah, that's the secret. And to be able to do that, you need to energize the body a lot, possibly every day. Then the energy level of the person goes up and the body starts to detox. Yeah, this is what we want. Yeah, that's how it works in short words. Huh? In the process, you learn how to, let's say, energetically diagnose what is going on. We don't do a medical diagnosis, but some kind of energy diagnosis. You learn to make your hand sensitive so you can feel what is going on in the body. It's magical. Yeah? It's not difficult, just needs practice. And more practice.
Now, I guess basically we live in an era where everything needs to be scientific, and if something is not proven, it's not quantified, it's not analyzed through the scientific empirical experiments, it's basically pseudoscience, which means it's bollocks, it's rubbish, it's not true. But we know that there are lots of anecdotes of people who recovered through alternative medicines, or just through the power of the mind, through creative visualizations, or through Reiki in your case. So I guess the way to go nowadays, in order for this to be accepted by the larger community and public, is to get some evidence somehow. So have you ever thought, or it's something that, you know, for you it works, you actually just want to focus on doing it and you don't care? Or have you ever got involved with some medical professionals and scientists to provide some more evidence of this?
Okay, so many of my students are doctors, nurses, and we work together. And for me personally, I don't care. I see how it works every day. I don't need proof, but I realize that a lot of the other people, they do require proofs. So one of my students recently collected all the scientific evidence there is about Reiki, and he did a book with 231 case studies that were done academically. And I, in the beginning of last year, I translated that for him into English. So there is a whole body of scientific evidence about that. So for those people who need it, or for people who want to go, let's say, to a hospital and say, look, I'd like to offer my services here, the doctors will say, show me some evidence, and they can bring that book and say, look, this is what has been found, take a look, it's serious. What I told you earlier about the ability to make your hand sensitive, to feel what is going on in the body, this is a Japanese Reiki system that is very scientific. I could sit down with any doctor and explain that to him, and he will listen to me, because it's scientific, it's repeatable, it's wonderful, and he will say, ah, this I want to learn. So we're not talking about, wow, man, the energy, it's incredible, and it does this wild things. Of course, any medical practitioner will laugh when they hear something like that. So it's Reiki really is science. A different type of science, yes, but it is science. So if I treat, let's say, somebody with five different people who have been properly taught, they all come to the same conclusions. They all feel the same thing. It's very scientific, very straightforward, beautiful.
Fascinating. Beautiful, fascinating.
Plus, then, of course, we have all the esoteric science. And this is a whole another chapter. Osho has been telling us that the human has so many different layers of being, the different bodies, the first being the physical body or the conscious, the next one being the etheric bodies or the unconscious, the next one out being the astral, the collective unconscious. And if you start working on these different bodies, you find that in the further layers of the aura, all the sickness is there. It's not in the physical body. It starts somewhere else. And unless that is addressed properly, things are not going to change. Of course, this would be difficult to explain to a scientist.
Yes, I guess it's just ignorance. It's just we don't know what we don't know. And the measurements that we use today are only focused on the body level. That doesn't mean that the rest is not true. It's just not known. And there are no ways to, unless you are, you need to be a mystic, you need to be esoteric. But by definition, that's something that cannot be really proven. But perhaps, as we progress, we may get better instruments and it will be possible to prove it as well. Who knows? Well, we know today for sure that there are many, 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 many cases of people who recover and doctors are astonished and they don't know how it works. They can't explain it, but it's true. It happens. There are thousands, perhaps even more, of people who have recovered through alternative methods.
Exactly. Like Osho, for example, I heard him say many times that almost all, I don't know what percentage he called 90% or more of illness starts elsewhere, starts in your body mind somewhere. And then by constant repetition of certain patterns, it sinks deeper and it ends up in the physical body. So we know that. And sooner or later, we'll be able to measure it. The effects of Reiki so far have not been able to be measured directly, but only indirectly. They did some measurements of the tension of water. That can be measured. If you measure the surface tension of water, And then after you Reiki the water, it's different. Yeah, but it's indirect. It's not good enough. Yeah, but sooner or later, somebody will come up with something. Technology is advancing so much.
Absolutely, absolutely. And in terms of water, you remind me there was a study, famous study, that if you say nice things to water and then you analyze the chemical composition, it's completely different to the another water where you say negative things. So that's I guess similar. You know, it's giving energy and intentions, and there is actually a visible chemical difference. But anyway,
yeah, this comes from a Japanese scientist, Dr. Emoto, my friend. Yeah, I know him personally.
Oh, wow.
And we did some work together also. It's very exciting.
Oh, wow. Yeah, he got some big, you know, this study is quite famous worldwide. You know, it's been used by many. So that's a beginning of trying to show what you do. Okay, so we are heading towards the end. I know that, you know, it sounds like you have a full-on activities and you're very much involved with the association, with Japan. So what are your latest projects? What are you up to? Even though, of course, with COVID and everything is kind of on hold and slowed down and we are all doing things remotely, but what are you working on at this time?
Yeah, okay, because in the traditional Reiki teaching, everything is done in person. We can't do what we usually do. Yeah, okay, we can do distant Reiki. This is one of the things we do, but teaching from a traditional point of view is out of the question. So for the past year, I've not been able to travel and teach. Usually I spend 6 months out of the year traveling all over the world to Japan. I teach there, in Latin America, in the US, everywhere in Europe, really, you name it, everywhere. And because I haven't been able to do it, and I have a hobby, which is writing, I always loved writing from when I was a kid. I've been working a lot, been writing a lot of stuff. I recently did 2 new books on Reiki. One came out in November, the next one will come out in a few months. Then I just finished a book on living in the present that will come out soon. It's with the graphic layout at the moment. Then some volumes of poetry that I've been writing will come out very soon with the editor now. And I've been working on my memories from Pune and the ranch. But I'm not ready with that. It still needs more work. Yeah. So I've been writing a lot, working in the garden. We grow organic olives. This is, as we talked about, my original profession, which I then continued with Osho. I used to grow his food, and I just can't stay away from farming. Yeah. So we have a beautiful veggie garden and organic olive oil that we sell in Germany. So this is what I'm doing day to day, writing, working in the garden, and playing guitar. So that's my day.
Wow, it sounds a lot of fun and very creative, and I love it. And it's also very earthy in that you work on the land, you're in touch with nature, and then at the same time you write, you play guitar. It sounds really amazing. Good life. So I've got 3 final questions that I ask all the guests on the show. The first one is, what is Osho's greatest contribution to the world?
Be here and now. That's it. Yeah, just 3 words. 4, okay. Be here and now. Yeah, that's it. That sums it up. Yeah? He's been teaching us to be present, whatever we do, to learn to generate awareness, not only in our meditative practice, but in daily life, yeah? To do everything fully, to give yourself fully, not to be stingy, yeah? And to really live a life of intensity, yeah? And put your love into everything that you do. Beautiful. Yeah? Without him, I will be a mess. I know that. really saved my butt.
Okay, so the second question is, what is the most beautiful gift you received from Osho?
Yeah, it's more or less the same. Yeah? He put the mirror in front of my face so I can see myself. Yeah? And by seeing myself, I see others in the same undistorted way. This is the greatest gift. I remember when in 1976, I went with my parents. I was a teenager, 16, 15 or 16. I went to Brittany. And I remember one day sitting on the beach, and there was just miles of beach, nobody on it. This big dog came from far away, and he was backtracing and going left and right, and came straight towards me. And he said hello to me. I stroked him for a while, and then he left. And I remember thinking, I want to be like that one day, straightforward, fearless, and tender. And when I met Osho, I remembered that dog, and I thought, I have found the person who will teach me exactly that. You know, usually when you meet people, it's always first checking the other out. Is he okay? Is he going to hurt me? What kind of person is he? What is his personality? With Osho, there was nothing like that. It was just straight, yeah? Pure love. That's it. Thank you, Osho.
Thank you, Osho. Wonderful. So the last question is, you leave the Osho experiment as a young man. What does it mean to you personally to be with Osho today?
It's the same. Yeah, it's exactly the same. There's no difference. So if I say that I don't miss him, it's not really true. Yeah? Of course, I miss him because he was the most unusual person I have ever met. Yeah? But I never felt, after he left his body, I never felt left alone. I never felt that he was gone. He's always present in my life, and I'm very grateful for that. So for me, really, nothing has changed. In a way, it's easier now because he's more accessible, yeah? Because he's here. You don't have to go somewhere to meet him. Don't have to go to Pune or to wherever, yeah? But you can meet him always here in this moment. Yeah? That's it for me.
Wow, that is so beautiful. Yeah. Look, Arjava, I'm so happy that I had this opportunity to chat with you, to connect with you, to learn your story, and also to feel your energy, to feel your heart, really this connection, even though it's just an hour. But I feel like I know you for a long time, and I feel like you are the type of person that if I met, we would just go and have fun and be like old friends. So I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much for being part of the Lavosho podcast.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay. Lots of love. Ciao.
Ciao, ciao.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it and leave a review. Visit lavosho.com for more episodes, blogs, or to connect with us.